Right, thank you all for coming this evening. As many of you know, this is in the middle of the London School of Economics Easter break, so a lot of our students hopefully are tucked away working hard to revise for their exams. So I think it speaks very well of the prestige and the fame and the respect that our speaker has got globally, but certainly within across the Middle East and in Tunisia, that we have such a good audience this evening. My name is Toby Dodge, and I'm lucky enough to be the director of the LSE's Middle East Center. But more importantly, I'm both pleased and honored to greet Sheikh Rashid Al-Ghannouchi, who is the founder and leader of Al Nahda Party in Tunisia. He's certainly one of the world's leading Islamic intellectuals and one of the most influential Tunisian politics in the post-revolutionary transition period. He led Al Nahda to victory in the October 2011 national constituency elections. He also serves as the Assistant Secretary General for the International Union of Muslim Scholars. He will speak for about 20, 25 minutes. And then we're lucky also to have Madawi Al-Rashid, who's a visiting professor at the London School of Economics Middle East Center, who's the author of a series of books on both Saudi Arabia and Islamic politics. And then she will be Sheikh Ghannouchi's discussant. And then we'll open it up to a series of points from some Tunisian MPs from Al Nahda that we have in the audience as well, and then we'll open it up to questions and answers. So without further ado, it's my honour to greet and welcome to the London School of Economics Sheikh Rashid Ghannouchi. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Good evening for all people. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. Thank you very much, Dr. Dodge. And thank you for the London School of Economics for giving me this opportunity to be here today. Nearly 6 years ago, what was called the Arab Spring was started in Tunisia, and then very quickly spread to other countries in the region. Many people believed that democracy has finally arrived to the Arab world and that the Arab exception is finally over. However, these hopes have been quickly destroyed, and we have seen many coup d'etat happens and civil wars spread from the country to the other. Only Tunisia escaped this fate and has remained as the only spring candle in the region. But also in Tunisia, things have not been easy. 4 years ago, in 2013, after the coup in Egypt and political assassination in Tunisia, our democratic transition almost collapsed. Many voices were raised seeking to shut down the democratic process in Tunisia. Tunisia faced many risks. But the single most important factor for me was the hope, the hopes and dreams of generation in Tunisia, and indeed around the region, that our countries can achieve democracy, that being a Muslim, an Arab, and democratic is possible. This is our challenge. What mattered most for us was to protect national unity and save the democratic transition. At the critical moment, we made a very difficult decision, rarely made by another political party. We gave up power that we won through free election, and we accepted to join the national dialogue that brought all the political players around the discussion table to find a way of this crisis. We, in my party, Nahda, decide to choose reconciliation and not revenge against others, against the people who were part of the old regime. We voted against the exclusion law, which would have excluded everyone who worked with the former regime. We did that because we saw what happened in Iraq and in Libya, which led to the collapse of the state. We also believe national reconciliation is a better path to opening a new page in our history, so that we can focus on the future, not on the past. We wanted a constitution for all Tunisians, not just the majority. That's why we adopted consensus and dialogue as the way of solving differences. Our decision, together with the other parties in the dialogue, put the train of democracy back on track. The constitution was adopted by 94% of parliament. We now have a constitution that guarantees democracy, citizen rights, equality between men and women, freedom of conscience and belief, and freedom of the press. As a result, Tunisia had its second free and fair elections in 2014, and we are now building the institutions of Democratic Republic. Although my party, Nahda, came second, we celebrated all the elections and congratulated the winners in 2014. Nida Tunis, who won the elections, Nida Tunis on their victory, because for us, free and fair elections is a victory for all Tunisians. Today, Nahda serves in the coalition government that represented nearly the government, 80% of parliament. We made this choice to avoid any sort of polarization and strengthen our young transitional democracy. Ladies and gentlemen, as a party, we have continued our evolution. At our last party conference last May, we voted to evolve from a social movement to move. We voted to move from a social movement into a civic democratic political party, which separates politics from religious and social activities. We believe that this is a very important step in our history to establish a real political party. Just as there are Christian Democrats, Jew Democrats, Hindu Democrats, there can also be Muslim Democrats. In the Muslim world today, we have a battle of ideas. and models. Ours is one where you can be Muslim and Democrat in the same time, where Islam is compatible with human rights, minority rights, and women rights. Another model is represented by ISIS, where Islam is linked with terrorism and tyranny, where democracy is haram. We believe that is halal, not haram. We believe that can interpretation is what our region and the world need, our interpretation of Islam. Indeed, I can say that Nahda is the most democratic party in Tunisia today. Since 1981, our party has adopted democracy, both as a set of principles and as a set of mechanisms. All our party structures are elected. Our decisions are made by majority. Like any other party, we have internal differences, but once a decision is made democratically, we respect the outcome. We believe this is the key of Nahda's strength, and it has been key to the success of Tunisia transition. Despite Tunisian huge progress, we have many challenges ahead. The first is the economy. Economic growth is key to building a healthy democracy. The revolution was a call for freedom, development, and jobs. Young people in Tunisia today are waiting to see if democracy can deliver bread, can deliver fruits. Our government is working hard to reform and modernize the economy and create opportunities for all Tunisians. We have introduced a new investment code, bank reforms, and public-private partnership law. We call on all the friends of Tunisia to invest in democracy and encourage their investors to come to Tunisia, a gateway to Maghreb and Africa. The second challenge is security. Our enemies know that if they attack the economy, they can undermine democracy and extinguish the last flame of democracy in Arab world. That's why terrorists have attacked our tourism industry. Sadly, many of the victims of these attacks were British. We pay our respects to their families. These attacks have shown us the shortcomings in our security system. With help from Britain and other allies, we have learned many lessons and we have worked hard to improve our security response. Because of this, no major terrorist attack has taken place in the country for the last 2 years. We hope the British government will review its travel advice to Tunisia so that British tourists can come back to enjoy holidays in Tunisia, and by doing so, support Tunisia's transitional democracy by creating much of job. Despite the challenges, we are very optimistic. Tunisia has already shown that it can overcome the biggest difficulties peacefully. The next milestone in our transition are the local elections, which will be on the 17th of December this year. These elections will be part of decentralization reforms to change our very centralized system. We have succeeded in sharing power between political actors in the capital. Now we need to make sure power is shared beyond the capital. We hope this will drive local development in marginalized region and empower Tunisian citizens. Ladies and gentlemen, Arab citizens are faced with two narratives in the region. The first calls for extremism and terrorism. It claims that Islam and democracy are not compatible and calls for a clash of civilizations. The second narrative claims that stability can only be achieved through dictatorship. It refuses to recognize the Arab people's aspiration for freedom. Tunisia provides an alternative. Arabs do not have to choose only between dictators and Daesh. Forcing them to do so will only cause more violence and instability in our world. That's why Tunisia's success is critical, not only for the Tunisian people and the Arab region, but for the sake of justice and peace around the world. Thank you.
It's a pleasure and an honor to comment and just bring out some of the salient points raised by Sheikh Rashid Al-Ghannouchi, who I had the honor to meet a long time ago when he was in exile in London and spent over 20 years. So I'm really pleased to meet you and thank you for coming to LSC. I think what the Sheikh has drawn our attention to is the uniqueness of the Tunisian experience after 2010-2011. It is unique because it shattered several myths that some of us in the social science and in academic circles, in addition to the media and also in public discourse in general, about an important dimension that had basically plagued the Arab world, that the region is resistant to any form of liberalization, of democratization. And the main problem is not the Arab dictators who actually sort of continue to rule, but Islam and the Islamists themselves. But I think in the Tunisian example, although Tunis is very small, the Sheikh pointed our attention to the evolution of the Islamist experiment in a country that is small by its resources, its population, and also in relation to its neighbors. So narrative about the incompatibility between Islam and democracy was actually shattered. And the Sheikh pointed our attention to the Islamists giving up power on that particular moment when there was no consensus and there was a danger of Tunisia descending into bloodshed. And this goes against the narrative that Islamists are actually, they fake their interest in democracy. Once they are elected, they will stay in power forever. And here we have an example of how they can actually become, I wouldn't like to use the word pragmatic, but they could privilege the national interest over their own specific interest in being in power. So that is extremely important. There is, of course, a local narrative. It is Tunis, and it's not Egypt. It's not Saudi Arabia, where this has happened. And perhaps the history of Tunis, its local cultural tradition, and also the achievement of its own people, their education, their awareness of the danger that surround them, had prompted a political party like Al-Nahda to actually move beyond what we know about Islamists. Of course, the Sheikh pointed, because of this kind of success, Tunisia tended to draw the attention of big powers, regional powers, and quite a lot of them had a vested interest in aborting that success story in inverted commas. The regional powers found this combination of Islam and democracy a little bit threatening. I don't want to name the countries, but I'm sure you know them. And as a result, there is a vested interest in suffocating this very small experiment in order that it doesn't get exported. And we saw what happened in Egypt, which is actually one of the substantial, it is the substantial Arab country in terms of its demographic, in terms of influence, and the role it had played. But that is over now, and the country that is so important in the Arab world is back into military rule, and it seems to suit the regional powers that want to assert that only military dictatorships can actually control the region. So Tunis produced this experiment, which was short-lived, but it is an ongoing process, an ongoing project that may mutate, develop, regress. I have, as the Sheikh pointed out, that for this experiment to continue and for Tunisia not to descend into something similar to what is going on in other parts of the Arab world, Syria, Iraq, Libya, Yemen, etc., there has to be a serious economic growth in that small country. And this is extremely important, given that Tunisia also has one of the highest level of education of its youth in the Arab world. So investment from abroad is extremely important, and I think this was clear in Sheikh Ghannouchi's presentation to us. I have certain questions that come to my mind. One of them is the uniqueness of this Tunisian experiment. As you know, that Tunisia had experienced a top-down, aggressive secularization projects over several years since its independence. But despite that, we see that a party like Al-Nahda had managed to exist in that country at a certain level despite the repression. And also in exile, and link up with the people inside the country. And when the opportunity offered itself after 2010-11, they were the first to benefit from their mobilization. And this brings me to the role of exiles among the Islamists, whom we had a lot of them in London, as I remember, especially in north-west London. And I suspected, and this is a question to the Sheikh, whether his experience living in Britain for 20 years or so had influenced his thinking as an Islamist. So that's my first question. Second question is, it is intriguing how Tunisia, a country that had this top-down secularization, and there was no space for Islam to grow as a political movement in Tunisia, why did, despite the success of Al-Nahda, of going back to its roots in Tunisia, why Tunisia had produced the highest number of jihadis who had joined ISIS? It is really intriguing, simply because we had built these models in political science, I would say, that when you have Islamists being included in election, given the opportunity to operate freely and openly, then we are going to see an antidote to radical Islamist movement. So why has Tunisia, that had the opportunity to have a Nahda and its multiple branches, mobilization openly, had produced this trend? And according to statistics from people who count these jihadis, we are told that Tunisia had produced the most, who had left certain underprivileged parts of southern Tunisia and from some of the shanty towns around Tunis and migrated to perform this, join this global jihadi movement. My third point regards the criminalization of this kind of moderate Islamist groups, such as the Nahda or the Muslim Brotherhood in some major countries, such as Saudi Arabia, the UAE, who had actually invested quite a lot of money and resources in pursuing their own Islamists who actually link up with the ideas of Sheikh Rashid Ghannouchi and criminalized. Some of them are actually in prison in these countries. Why is your experiment threatening to a country like Saudi Arabia? If you could tell us, that would be great. And finally, as the parts of the Arab world descend into sectarianization, where serious economic grievances, exclusion from power, marginalization are expressed through sectarianism, are articulated through sectarianism. What is your explanation for this phenomena that we have been witnessing across countries, not only between Sunni and Shia, but also in terms of actually antagonizing and expelling and attacking other religious minorities, such as, for example, Christians in Egypt, Yazidis in Iraq? How do you explain that from your perspective? And luckily, Tunisia probably had not experienced this kind of mayhem. Thank you for coming to us, and I hope some clarification would be appreciated. And then Toby will open
it
up.
Yes, if you want to answer that, then we'll come to the audience in a minute.
Thank you very much. Your question needs another conference.
Do you want to
answer? Yes. The first question about my experience, whether I have been influenced by my stay in London for a long time or not. Surely I have been, I dealt with the reality, with the environment. When I came to Britain, I didn't came fundamentalist and transformed into Democrats. It's not true, because the text written by myself and our movement, we engage in democracy since 1981. Officially, as once we declare us a political party in 1981, we accept all principles of democracy without any exception. Even when journalist asked us if the Tunisian people choose the Communist Party, what you are doing, I reply without hesitation, we accept the people will, and to try to convince people in other elections to revise this decision. But in Britain, I discovered the directly the essence of democracy, especially the role of the Parliament, House of Commons, and how the mechanism of democracy play role in this country. Some of people of writer consider that because Nahda Party defend the parliamentary system in a milieu of French where the presidency system is ruled and dominate the mind of the Tunisian elite. And we succeed to establish system, parliamentary system, but with some changes, small changes. It's not far from saying that I'm an amajib bin Nizam al Parlament in Britain.
Yeah, you appreciate the parliamentary system in Britain?
Yes,
and
I prefer
it to a presidential system.
Yes, I prefer than the presidency system. And so far, the main defender of the parliamentary system in Tunisia is our movement. Whether we have influenced by the British system is not a problem. Or I have qira'a.
A reading
to the system, Muslim Islamic system during this Islamic civilization. I consider that the centralized power in the Abbasid or the Ottoman is the center power is very weak, and there is sort of parliamentary or not centralized system in any way. But the French model is very centralized, and we consider that without evitate this system, we cannot fight against dictatorship. So we have decentralized the power. This is idea, this is principle of Nahda. I'm not negate that I have been influenced by the parliamentary system. I enjoy during 20 years in Britain, I enjoy the freedom. It's amazing that during 20 years, no one day, never I have been asked by the police or arrested or disturbed. So I think the freedoms in this country is very, very high, and it's example of freedoms. And I wish that in Tunisia one day can Tunisian people enjoy such freedoms. Why there are, if Tunisia enjoy the democracy, how can explain the high number of Tunisian terrorists? It's not acceptable that The number of Tunisian tourists is not agreed by all sides. Tunisian officially, the interior minister in Tunisia considered that the number is about 3,000. Mm-hmm. About 3,000. Some others consider that the number is 7,000. I believe what our say. Even 3,000 is not few. Is not few. I would like to note that these tourists have not brought up under the revolution, but have brought up under Ben Ali regime dictatorship. So they are reaction against the vacuum, religious vacuum in Tunisia during Bourguiba and the Ben Ali regime. So this vacuum produce the reaction. If we against extremism, like extremism, there is Islamic extremism. So we cannot fight against extremism by extremism, but this is the reality. We note that since the independence in Tunisia, the high school of Islamic civilization called Zaytuna Mosque have been closed down by Bourguiba. So this is that sort of vacuum. Islamic movement, which represented by Nahda, try to fill this vacuum, but since 1981, the machine of state tried to eliminate or eradicate our movement. So this is take left place to the extremism. That's because I fully believe that no future for extremism in Tunisia. Because this phenomena is inherited from Ben Ali regime. And now we notice also there is sort of disintegration, economic integration. All researchers notice that this tourists came from inner regions of Tunisia, not the coastal. The coast is more developed than the inner regions. So they are fruit of this economic, the social economic in the region, some region. Once the stability come, once the develop, can we develop this inner region? I think no future for this strange phenomena in Tunisia. This disease threatens the world. No one, no country, no city is immune from being attacked by the terrorism. So we have fight together this phenomena, not by the police, only the police, but all, because this phenomena is complicated phenomena. We have to give people right knowledge of Islam. There is lack of knowledge of Islam. Many researchers notes that no terrorist has been educated in real religious school like Azhar. And I didn't. I listed many leaders of terrorism. No one have been educated in Azhar, for example, or in Zaytuna or in Qarawin. They are most, whether they have very low education or they have educated not in science, human. Human science,
yes.
Or in religious academic, they engineers, they doctors, but no philosopher or historical, no science, human science. Why an Azhari coming educated from Azhar cannot be terrorist? Because if he is scholar, he discovered that Islam is not a point, simple point, and who doesn't believe in this point, he is kafir. Islam is very vast. It's perspective. Very wide perspective. So he cannot be a terrorist because he knows that there is many ijtihad in Islam. Within Islam there are plurality within Islam. So he cannot become terrorist who have enough knowledge of Islam. So this phenomena has to be attacked, fought by knowledge, real knowledge of Islam, by economy, social economy, to tashfif al-yanabiya with drain the sources of poverty, and also the democracy is mean to fight against a dictator. So what we expect from Gaddafi regime, Ben Ali regime, Mubarak regime, Bashar, what we expect the Democrats? Opposition. Usually the opposition is the reaction of part of the regime. So if we would like to change the position, we have to change also the regime in place, because dictators usually produce, I think Marx has said that any regime worth its opposition. About the third one, whether our experience of democracy threatened by some state or regime, some countries in Arab world, we try to avoid any clash with any Arab state, any Arab government. Tunisian revolution is not to export, it's to istihlak mahalli, to
local consumption. The internet, you know, you can't stop it.
Not to export, to
local consumption.
Not to export. Tunisia is a very small country. We haven't the potential to export a revolution.
Now, if you don't mind, I'll open it up to questions. And then once we've had a round of questions, I'll bring... we're lucky enough to have an additional MP.
Okay.
So after the first round of questions, I'll come back to you. Yes, you, sir, and then you, and then these two.
Thank you.
Mohammed bin Badan. I fully agree what you have said, Professor Rashid. Tunisia is a completely different.
The microphone is just coming to you.
Mohammed bin Madani, Maghreb Review. By way of publicity, the Maghreb Review published the first article on Nahda by Niki Kidi back in 1982. I was in Tunisia, or go to Tunisia, four times a year. And I was there about 3 weeks ago. To be honest, this time, I'm a little happy. I interviewed many people who tell me that since the revolution, security, respect does not exist anymore. Okay. And I don't want to tell you the whole story of my journey from Tunis to Sfax and back. I interviewed over 300 people for my work. And of course, if as Professor Rashid said, I think the reason the Islamists didn't become another dictators because they were not let in, they were not allowed by the Tunisian society, who is much more well educated. Now, a question for Ghannouchi. Do you get any help for, because you talked about security, do you get any help, or does Tunisia get any help from its neighbors to combat terrorism, either coming from Libya or from Mali to Algeria? So that's the question. Do you get any help from your neighbors to combat the terrorism?
To combat our tourism?
Terrorism. If you hold that for a minute, we'll get a list of questions. If you had a mic next door, thanks.
Assalamu alaikum, Sheikh Rashid Ghannouchi. Thank you for the wonderful talk that you gave just now. My name is Balkis, and I'm studying Queen Mary. Short question, have you ever met Muslim-majority countries in Southeast Asia, Indonesia or Malaysia particularly, as a model for democracy and economic growth as well? Thank you.
Excellent. And we have two questions up there. It's Yusuf with a beard, and behind you, Yusuf with a striped shirt.
No.
Thank you. Yunus from Turkey. I would like to ask you something regarding to the Sheikh speech. Thank you, Sheikh. I'm really grateful for hearing you, your speech. You mentioned that you prefer the presidential system instead of the parliamentary system. Turkey...
Yes.
Okay. As we know that Turkey has passed to the presidential system at the last week. Turkey has been shown to the Middle East countries as an example with its democratic way. Do you know that is it reasonable to show the Turkey again to the Middle East countries as an example with its presidential system?
Okay, thank you.
Yes, thank you. My name is Ibrahim. I have a question for Dr. Mudawi as well, if I can get in a comment from Sheikh Rashid. She talked about the problem in the Middle East and Arab area about the Islamists with the democracy. But the Arab Spring show us that there is no any problem between the Islamists and democracy. The problem is the West, with the West countries, that they are not willing to allow democracy in our region. For example, what happened in Egypt is an example for accepting Sisi after the power go to the military, and he's welcomed in all of around the world. And all of them, they are happy with that.
We've got your question. So
thanks.
The problem's the West, not the West. And then the gentleman in the... Yeah, we'll get you in there. The gentleman in the blue shirt will be the last one for this round, and we'll come back to you this side the next round.
Sheikh Ghannouchi, thanks very much for your talk. I wanted to ask what you made of Islamic nationalism and whether you believe Ennahda's ideology is compatible with nationalism, and if so, how would that function, and what would it look like? And secondly, secondly, related to that question is, do you have any information on the sorts of, you know, whether there is any voter transfer between people who voted for Ennahda to Nida Tunis, and if you have any explanation for why that transition took place? Why did they abandon Ennahda? Why did those voters go to Nida Tunis?
Okay, thank you. So that's six questions. I think there's a cheeky two questions at the end, but we'll let you get away with it. The first question is, has the Tunisian government had any help from its neighbours at the neighbouring states in combating terrorism?
This question is not clear. We are part of the government. We couldn't have any official relation with any other government, only through the official, because we are part of the government. How can take any help from Algeria to fight against the Algerian terrorists?
But does the government itself get help from them?
No, the government, there is a real cooperation between Tunisia government and Algeria and Europe and America. So it's official relation. It's normal.
That's good.
But as a party, how can...
I think that answers
behind
it.
Yes.
The next question, I think, is more interesting in that, do you think that the example of states in Southeast Asia that are both Muslim majority and democratic offer a model for Tunisia or the rest of the Middle East?
The model, I think, its country has to perform and develop its model. Okay. No model. I don't believe that there is a model. Egypt or Iran or Tunisia or any, so its country. So we come to the
Turkish model.
Not Turkish model, but the nationalism, Now we Islam is a religion for the humankind. All Muslim considered as one ummah. This is by belief. But by reality, in reality, we are living under the so-called nation state. So Tunisia is nation state, and Malaysia is nation state. Indonesia, any state has to deal with Islam according of their scholars, their situations, and no model in this field to be imitated or followed. So we try in Tunisia to develop our model, and we consider that the only source of legalize any law is the parliament. So parliament is mujtahid today.
No, I think the gentleman up there was asking you.
Exercises legal reasoning.
Yes.
The gentleman up there was asking you about Turkey's move to the presidential system and what your thoughts were, and has this removed the example of Turkey as a good example for the region?
Yes, Turkey, a nation state, has full right to choose their example, their
model.
They have own understanding of Islam, and they deal with their realities, whether we accept or refuse. we can only take some lessons from others, from to benefit from their experience, avoiding the negative and benefit from the positive sides of their experience. And democracy can be expressed, represented by presidency system and parliamentary system. We choose, we prefer the parliamentary system. If Turkey choose others, it's a Turkish question.
Now, the gentleman there is arguing with the example of Egypt that it's not actually Islam that stifles democracy, but in the case of the coup in Egypt and the taking of power of Sisi, it was the West that encourages the stifling.
Yes, encouraging what happened in Egypt is coup d'etat. It's clear. We have to name things as it is. The Western democracies, how can explain their encouragement to this, to the regime based on coup d'etat? It's a scandal. I think it's a scandal to see a general like received in most of Western capitals of democracies. I think it's another scandal. It's not the only one. But
sorry, just a clarification. I did not say that Islam is an obstacle to democracy. I said in the narrative about the Arab world, it's usually regarded by some scholars, policymakers, that Islam is the obstacle, and the Tunisian model has actually debunked that narrative, that you can combine Islam and democracy. Just a correction.
Excellent. Now, the final question I want to address to our two members of parliament here, and it is the argument that what explains the shifting of voting to El Nahda, but also away from El Nahda, in the national elections. So who wants to speak first? The microphone to this gentleman here.
Osama Sayer is a member of our parliament.
Thank you. It's the price of democracy and the price of the democratic transition, because what happened in Tunisia is that different politicians with different views, they choose to sit around the table. To, if we have just to think about our voters, we will stay just in our political parties and we will defend just our ideas without accepting any debate and any discussion, and without thinking that accepting the others is the way to deal. Tunisia, it's completely the opposite. A lot of our voters, they understood this message that Tunisia succeeded because of this consensus way. And other countries that they lived in, the Arab Spring, they didn't succeed because they excluded each other and they didn't accept each other, and they are fighting. In Tunisia, the solution started when we decided to sit around the table with the national dialogue, and actually we took also a Nobel Peace Prize. So I think it's the right way, and we're going to continue in this direction, because what Sheikh Rashid used to say is in democratic transition, the country cannot be governed by simple majority. We need large and very large majority to face all the problems and social expectation, and by time trying to do reforms and push the country in the right direction. There is a price, and now they decided to pay it for the benefit of the national interest.
Well, I think that in normal periods...
Herzia is also member of our parliament and head of Lujna
Women and
Women's Committee yes. in the Parliament and member of our political bureau.
Thank you, Sheikh. So, in normal period and in long established democracies, when a party is in power governing, there is some erosion, we can say erosion, of its popularity. But we govern it in a nascent democracy and in a very difficult transition. And we had to take some difficult decision. And we were, in a way, countered by campaign of, let's say, disheartened Chinese as revolution. Yet, we were the second party in the 2014 elections. So it's normal. What happened, it's normal. And indeed, between the choice of staying the first, let's say, party on the level of elections and making the good choice of Tunisia, we have chosen Tunisia. And please let me briefly interact with the gentleman who said something very interesting. He said that in interviewing Tunisians, he had this conclusion that it's Tunisian who prevented Islamists, that is our party, from turning into dictators after winning the election of 2011. Sorry. Just I want to reply, we are Tunisian. We are part of Tunisian society. So we prevented ourselves from turning into dictators. Why? Because we are generally, intrinsically Democrats. We are the first to say that in 81, Tunisia does not need more Islam. It needs simply more liberty and more democracy. Thank you.
If someone could take the microphone, I'm going to take questions from this side of the room. And the first question, the lady with her hand up right at the back.
Thank you very much, Sheikh Rashid Al-Ghannouchi. This is Sahar Al-Faifi from Wales. I've got a question for you, and I agree that there isn't a political model that is ideal to be followed, but quite interestingly, that Tunisian model is quite unique in terms of coupling political reform with economic reform, and this is what Turkey has been doing. However, there is a criticism that is facing another Baha party in Tunisia, that it has assimilated so much so that it has lost its own identity. Now, I can understand that, yes, Nahda is for local consumption, but for example, what we have seen recently from another party failing to condemn what happened in Syria with the gas attack in Khan Sheikhoun, and the simple condemnation was expected from the party, yet they couldn't. Now, I don't know what is the view of another party in taking a national stances on things that matter to us.
We have one question. Or do you want?
That's it. That's my question. Great. Yeah.
Right,
thank you.
Thank you. Right. Hands up. Then you, sir, and I'm coming down the line. So you, sir, with you. Thank you.
My name is Razwan. I'm a student at Queen Mary University of London. My question is to Sheikh: is your move from being an Islamist party to civic democratic party strategic, or does it imply that there is no longer room for political Islam in the Arab world today? And thank you.
Right, yeah, and the gentleman next to you, if you hand the mic there.
Thank you for speaking to us today. My question is about the inevitable Trump. Do you think Tunisia has a special place given the Trump administration's sort of obsession with fighting terrorism? Do you think this special model can kind of appeal in a very specific way to what Trump wants to do? Or do you think he'll kind of prefer the Jordans and the Egypts of the region? Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Yes, no, actually, behind the lady behind you.
Thank you, Sheikh, for your insightful talk. My name is Zainab. I'm Tunisian. I'm doing my master in politics here at LSE. So my question is about the religious nature of your party. So since Ennahda came in power, like they decided to do a coalition with the Secularist Party during the constitution writing. There was no real Islamic principle that have been uploaded. And of course, after a recent announcement, you made it clear that there'd be a separation between the politics and religious strand. So my question is, what exactly is Islamic about Nahda? And this unclear religious nature of your party led to any tension within the movement and perhaps exasperated your supporters.
Thank you. If we come down to this gentleman with the... if you stick your hand up, the gentleman with the light beard and the short hair. The mic's there.
Thanks very much. Adel Hamezi, St. Anthony's, Oxford and SOAS. A question for Sheikh Rashid, and to dovetail on, I think, the last question from the first round. I think voter transfer is largely, of course, down to the economic shortcomings under the first government. And I'd be very interested to hear, you referred to friends invest in democracy. I'd be interested to know what you would like from these friends. What does that look like? Perhaps who are these friends? You've, of course, alluded to US, EU, and, of course, Algeria. Many would agree that Libya's security situation is Tunisia's security situation. What can be done, and what would you like to see? And a small addendum would be the role of multilaterals like the IMF, who've squeezed Tunisia, and the role of the unions in under the first government.
So what can the international friends of Tunisia do about the economy and the security?
And who are they?
Who are they? Yeah. Okay.
And keeping in mind the complications of the IMF situation recently, of course. Okay. So be careful what you wish for.
And yes, there's a question for the lady here.
Thank you, Sheikh Rajal Ghannouchi, for your talk. So basically, my question would be a little bit cliche to most Islamic parties if I were to ask it. You say that you promote democracy and individual rights. Just if I were to say more specifically, how has Al-Nahda promoted homosexual rights, women's rights, in compatibility with democratic societies?
Excellent. Right, that's six questions, and depending on how quickly they're answered, we might get another round in, but we have to end in 15 minutes. So, Sheikh, the lady at the back asked a question around Al-Nahda's public statements or lack of them on Syria. Do you feel your party has assimilated too much?
Two,
I suppose, a secular ideal?
Yeah. About Syria, we note that you have not read and that Nahda issued a statement condemning totally the Syrian regime about the atrocities made by his army. And this is not the first time when we condemn this savage regime. This regime condemned by all free people.
I think there were a series of questions about, one of them was, what is Islamic?
What is Islamic?
About Al-Nahda.
Yes.
And have you become more democratic because the space for political Islam has shrunk in the Middle East?
The main idea in Nahda movement is to prove that democracy, modernity, human rights are not against Islam. Islam are compatible, is compatible with the main ideas of modernity, among them the democracy. This is the main idea since Nahda began in 1981. And if you follow our writings, our deeds, you can see this line. What Nahda, which position of Islam in Nahda, Islam, we believe that Islam is set of values. Islam is a reference of values. So, but there isn't in Islam any church. That means there isn't any official spokesman. There is free interpretation in Islam. Any Muslim can read the Quran and assume its responsibility directly vis-à-vis God. So no one can, you don't need any confession in front of anyone. Your responsibility vis-à-vis your God. So never, there is in Islam ijtihad, free interpretation of holy text. So Nahba has own ijtihad. Islam is the main source of its culture, and all attempt in our history to, especially into after the independence of Tunisia, any temptation to eliminate Islam or marginalize Islam or neutralize Islam have failed, because Tunisian people is Muslim. So we have to use to liberate Islam from the extremism explanation of Islam. Islam has to be used as mean of democratize our society, to develop them, not to destroy them. Like the professor said, that Middle East now is fight each other. There is civil war in Iraq, in Syria, not between secularists and Islamists only, but between Islamists. Qaeda, Daesh, Nusra, Sham, Hawlai Jama'at. This is pretend that they are good Muslim, but they fight each other because all of them, they are extremist. So dealing with the plurality is very important. This kind of this interpretation of Islam, which is the base of this jama'at, this group, cannot unify our nation, because everyone pretend that he represents God in earth, and his views in Islam the only views accepted. So democratize our societies, deepen the culture of free interpretation, the culture of human rights, the quality, the citizenship as a base of the society is very important. I think Nahba is pretend also it's a good Muslim.
Talking of pluralism within Tunisia.
The Tunisian people, the only source of judge of accept Nahba or refuse Nahba. And in 2011, most of Tunisian accept or choose Nahba. And we took power with others. In 2014, we become not the first party, the second party. That means that Tunisian people doesn't arise a green card for Nahba. Also, didn't arise a red card, but it's a yellow card. warning us. So this is the importance of democracy. The Tunisian people asked us to revise our ideology, our manner to manage situation. So the place of Islam respected in Tunisia in constitution. Tunisian constitution named Islam as a source. The identity of Tunisian state is Arab-Muslim state. Tunisian state is Arab-Muslim, democrat state, civil state, and Arab-Muslim state. So we don't believe that there is any contradiction between civil state and Muslim state. About Islamist, we stopped to use this term because this term have been mixed and hijacked by extremists. So we decide to distance ourselves from any sort of extremism by saying we are Muslim Democrat, to distinguish us from any sort of extremism or terrorism.
So on pluralism in Tunisia, on human rights, the question here is asked, what has Al-Nahda done to expand women's rights and in Tunisia and the rights of homosexuals?
Please let opportunity to our sister.
A microphone.
To speak. Usually men speak on behalf of women, even in the woman's shoe.
In our constitution, I think one of the most important chapters is the chapter about rights and liberties. Whether they are homosexual or not, black or white, poor or rich, whatever is their ethnicity or their religion, we have stated in the Article 21, I think, the equality of all citizens. And we have incriminated any distinction in rights between Tunisian citizens. And what we have said as Nahda, as the member of parliament, convinced that Islam is there for human dignity, is how to give this respect, the human dignity, without entering in the privacy of people to inquire how they live or with whom. But we are also Democrat and Conservative Party. Yes, we have conservatism. We are not going to tell stories to people. And we respect the way our society lives. And we listen to our society. So if you ask me if we have mentioned the LGBT rights in our constitution or in our laws, I'll tell you no, we haven't done. But we have stated equality between all citizens. Concerning women, Tunisia is already a country having, let's say, a privileged status of women. It was the achievement of the modern state. So there is, a common concern of all those who have drafted the constitution to preserve this status. And another parliamentary group suggested when we have not yet started drafting the constitution. Before drafting the constitution, we have suggested that what we call the personal status code, that is to say the law, family law, can be considered as an organic law. That is to say a law that cannot be changed unless by the 2/3 of parliament vote. So we have given the status, personal status code, a certain privilege. Then in our constitution, and especially Article 46, we have mentioned, first of all, that all rights acquired by women are rights of Tunisian society and human rights. It cannot be touched. And we have mentioned the equality of opportunity in social, economic, and political field between men and women. And we stated also we have constitutionalized parity, that is to say 50-50, between men and women as candidates for any elected assembly, whether it is local, regional, or national. And we have committed the state to fight all kinds of violence against women. This is why now we have, as one of the main projects discussed in the parliament right now, the comprehensive law about how to stop in violence against women. And we have also pressurized the government to create a council in the government, in the head of the under the direct responsibility of the head of the government. This council is called the Council of Equal Opportunity Between Men and Women, to implement equality in different fields. This is generally what is happening in Tunisia in this field.
Excellent. Thank you. Two questions around international relations. The first one can be summed up. No, we're going to end in a minute because we're coming to the end of our time. The final can be summed up as, what does Donald Trump mean for Tunisia, or what are your views about the Donald Trump presidency? And the second one, which I restate, you mentioned that you have friends helping Tunisia. Who are your friends? Who are the international friends helping Tunisia, and also the multilateral organizations, and what are they doing both economically and in security?
Yes, Trump is president of United States, not president of Tunisia. He elected to rule the American situation. Our relation is with America. It's since 200 years there is a relationship between Tunisian state and American state, and this relation will continue regardless who have been elected in the United States, because we consider that United States is democrat state, and democrat state there is institutions who take the power regardless conservative or democrat. It's American matters, not Tunisian matters.
Then on your friends internationally, who
help us?
Yeah. By us, I think we mean the Tunisian government.
Our friends. So we call people, we call Democrats to invest in democracy. Invest in democracy in Tunisia. This is very important. People invest in fighting terrorism, invest billions. If they invest to encourage democracy, a small part of what spent, I think the result will be better and positive, and will be all benefit. So I think I would like to end.
Yes.
Yes. I would like to thank you for this opportunity, and also to focus on the main password of Nahda project is the concept of consensus. Consensus is the main key of the success of Tunisian project of democracy. We believe that 51% is enough to rule in normal democracy, in stable democracy, but in democracy in change, transition is not enough. We need that left and right, Islamist and secularist, work together. If not, the system will be collapsed. And what happened in Egypt, that the polarization, that the Egyptian society has polarized, and any sort of polarization during the transitional democracy is considered a real danger. The second concept is the role of the social dimension. If the democracy cannot feed the people, will be collapsed. So we focus now in social and economic problems, because without food, without bread, without health, no democracy. So we main goals now is to recover the economy. I think about what happened in Arab world, clash between sects, between rulers and people. I fully believe that Arab world will be democratized, and the so-called Arab Spring, which transformed into a catastrophe, I think it's a temporary situation. Democracy will prevail on Arab world, because Arab world is part of the world. In open sky, in open media, dictators cannot survive forever. So the itinerary of any revolution is not easy. French Revolution took about 100 years to achieve its goals. So when we saw what happened in Egypt or in Syria, we have not upset and considered that Arab Spring is failed. I believe that in 2011, Arab world enter a new era of change. And it's a matter of time, of number of victims, to achieve the democracy, to liberate ourselves from dictators, and to prevent terrorists to hijack Islam. Islam is mean of democratize, not to dominate people and to prevent their liberties. So it's a period of change in Arab world now. Tunisia has succeeded because many elements. One of them, the Tunisian society is homogeneous. There is level of education, as the professor said. Also, the role of our Tunisian army, we pay a lot of respect to Tunisian army, who didn't take opportunity to take power and to dominate, to eliminate the revolution, but he protect the ballot box, he protect democracy, and prevent from any involvement in policy. And it's fruit of Bourguiba stage. Bourguiba stage took away the army, not intervene. So this is element, because in any state has own army, but Egyptian state, the Egyptian army has own state. So the problem in Egypt. The problem is in Egypt is more difficult, but Egyptian people, Syrian people, all Arab people will reach their goal, their dream to democratize themselves.
Well, that's an excellent and very optimistic and positive note to end on. I'd like to thank the audience here tonight. I'd also like to very much thank Professor Al-Rashid, but most importantly, I'd like to thank Sheikh Rashid Al-Ghannouchi for, I think, a wide-ranging, I think, very insightful, thoughtful talk. Thank you for coming to the London School of Economics. Thank you.